You're listening to West Virginia Morning. I'm John Cantese. This morning, 10 members of the state legislature, 7 of which are Republicans and 3 of which are Democrats, will meet at the state capitol to begin the work of balancing the budget for the 2017 fiscal year. This is the only thing the lawmakers are constitutionally required to do each year, pass a budget. But as Ashton Mara reports, this year, lawmakers' ability to do so is in doubt.
West Virginia lawmakers have known for months now that balancing the 2017 budget would be an uphill battle, with revenues predicted to come in some $466 million below estimates. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin presented the legislature with a plan to balance the budget based on the continuation of cuts to state agencies and some tax increases, including a bump to the state's tobacco tax. While senators were able to pass a tobacco tax hike, delegates weren't willing to do the same. They looked to further cuts and sweeping one-time monies from agency accounts to balance their version of the budget. But some of the bills needed to tap the accounts were lost in the Senate. Now, the two chambers are left with budget proposals that won't work. Governor Tomlin says he's disappointed in the legislature's inability to come together to find budgetary solutions so far.
Yeah, we have two choices. It's either to get a sustaining revenue source that we can go on with, or cut budgets.
But cutting agency budgets enough to make up for the revenue shortfalls would be devastating in some areas, according to Tomlin. He says it could mean 80 state troopers losing their jobs, the closure of 6 county tax offices, leaving another 30-plus state employees without work, tuition increases at major universities, the closure of branch campuses of community and technical colleges. The list continues. There is a third choice, though, and that's to take additional dollars out of the state's revenue shortfall reserve fund, what's more commonly known as the rainy day fund. What's essentially a savings account of taxpayer dollars, West Virginia lawmakers have often touted the state's rainy day fund as one of the strongest in the nation. It is part of the reason West Virginia has such a high bond rating, ultimately saving West Virginians money on the interest rates the state has to pay on outstanding bonds and loans. The fund is an option, both House Speaker Tim Armstead and Senate President Bill Cole say they believe should be part of the mix when balancing the 2017 budget. Senators did not draw on the account in their version, but delegates did pull nearly $30 million from the reserve to balance their budget. Cole says ultimately he believes the rainy day monies will have to be used in the upcoming year.
It's no different than any of us in our own homes. If we lose our job, or, you know, we go to our savings. If we're lucky enough to have savings, we go to our savings again to pay the car payment or the rent payment or the house payment. And you know, it's what West Virginia probably needs to do in order to get us around the corner.
But reaching into the rainy day fund, at least too deeply, is something Tomlin says he's not willing to do.
I said I'm not going to do that. Once again, that's balancing the budget on one-time money that's out there.
So will lawmakers be able to find a solution by Tuesday, one that the governor will actually sign? Cole doesn't think it's likely.
I just believe that that's ultimately what's going to bring this budget together. We'll be in a special session in a month or 2 months.
Tomlin also believes a special session is in the future, but a month or 2 months down the road, that's not necessarily a timeline he agrees with. The governor would like to see a budget in place as soon as possible to prevent any issues with various parts of state government, including the state's public employee health insurance enrollment process. Without proper funding, employees will see an increase to their premiums and must be notified during an open enrollment period, which begins in just a few weeks. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
Members of the conference committee chosen to work solely on the budget over the next 2 days were announced late Saturday night, and almost immediately Democrats in the House began criticizing the speaker's choice for membership. As Liz McCormick reports, the criticism isn't solely based on who was chosen, but from which parties.
House Speaker Tim Armstead appointed 5 delegates to represent the House on the Budget Conference Committee. Finance Chair Eric Nelson, Vice Chair Eric Householder, Delegates Bill Anderson and Carol Miller, and 1 Democrat, Delegate David Perry. Minority Leader Tim Miley criticized Armstead for the decision, appointing only 1 Democrat when proportionally, he says, the committee should have included 2 Democrats to represent the number of members from the party elected to the full House of Delegates. Miley says he's disappointed and disheartened by the decision.
Number one, the speaker didn't have the courtesy of even putting the minority chair of finance on the conferee committee. And number two, he didn't put the number of Democrats that represent the proportionality of Democrats in the House of Delegates.
Miley says the Democrat who Speaker Armstead did appoint doesn't have the experience that Finance Minority Chair Brent Boggs could bring to the conversation. But the Speaker has the power to appoint whomever he chooses to the conference committee. Saturday evening, Armstead said he chose not to appoint Boggs because he voted against the budget bill approved earlier in the week in the House. Miley was not just critical of who House leadership chose to appoint to the committee, but also of the work conferees will do over the next 2 days, calling it a, quote, complete waste of time.
Governor Tomlin presented a budget with various pieces of legislation that would have provided both a balanced budget and revenue enhancement mechanisms, not using one-time money. This group chose to ignore those revenue enhancements, chose to use one-time money, and it took them 60 days to try and make that happen, and they still couldn't make it happen.
During the last 60 days, House Finance killed or tabled a number of bills that were aimed at helping to balance the budget. One involved increasing the tobacco tax, another dealt with a tax increase to help with maintenance of roads, and one looked at an increase in the sales tax. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Charleston.
You're listening to West Virginia Morning at 7:50. Today is going to be mostly cloudy with a 50-50 chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly this afternoon and this evening. Highs will be ranging from the mid-50s in the eastern panhandle to near 70s in the southwest. And tonight, the chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms will continue with lows in the mid-40s.
Support for this weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents are available at erieinsurance.com.
To require voters to show some form of identification before casting a ballot is on its way to Governor Tomlin's desk and, as Ashton Mara reports, could be getting a signature.
Lawmakers approved a negotiated version of the voter ID bill late Saturday night. The bill requires voters to show some form of documentation at their polling places. The list includes any government-issued ID, including a driver's license, Medicare or Medicaid card, concealed carry permit, or hunting or fishing license. Voters can also use a health insurance card, or bank statement. If none of those documents are available, a voter can call on another adult, even a poll worker, to verify his or her identity. Democratic Senator Corey Palumbo had amended the bill to expand the list of verifying documents and was satisfied with the negotiated bill.
Well, honestly, it's probably better than I thought it was going to be. I mean, I hate to lose any of the options that we had because I think if we're going to make a voter ID law, let's make it as easy for folks to comply with as possible. But honestly, I thought that we were going to have to give up more than we did.
Palumbo had also amended the bill to include an automatic voter registration process through the Division of Motor Vehicles, which remained in the final version. Governor Tomlin said Saturday while he had not seen the final bill, he does not believe showing some form of identification at a polling place would create a hardship for most West Virginians, potentially indicating a signature. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
A bill to repeal Common Core-based standards and align standardized tests is on its way to the governor. But as Liz McCormick reports, the bill has changed since it was first introduced in a House committee.
West Virginia's Common Core-based education standards were repealed by the State Board of Education in December and replaced with the West Virginia College and Career Ready standards. As approved by lawmakers Saturday, House Bill 4014 requires the deans of West Virginia University and Marshall University's schools of English, math, and engineering to appoint experts in their fields to a commission to review the new standards. That commission will then recommend changes to the State Board of Education. The bill does prohibit the continued use of the Smarter Balanced Assessment, the standardized tests aligned with Common Core. It also removes a requirement for students in the 9th and 10th grade in the state to be tested. House Education Chairman Paul Espinosa says he's pleased with the outcome of the bill and especially with the testing provisions.
I mean, the whole issue of testing, you know, that certainly was a big part of House Bill 4014. One of the big things, of course, that we heard about the current assessment is that educators don't get information in a timely manner in order to be able to utilize that information to help guide instruction. And so this does provide the flexibility to look at some other assessments.
During his 2016 State of the State, Governor Tomlin urged lawmakers to not change the standards. Saturday night, he said he would consider the bill once he could fully vet its provisions. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Charleston.
As lawmakers made their final decisions in the House Senate chambers Saturday, hundreds of protesters gathered just outside the Capitol to voice their displeasure and their opposition with the outcome of the 2016 legislative session. Rob Engel has the story.
The protesters' rallying cry, "Remember in November," was a call to action for voters to express their outrage at lawmakers at the polls. At issue with the group was the passage of a number of pieces of legislation that organizers said attempt to silence West Virginians in favor of special interest groups. Joe Solomon, who works at Taylor Books in Charleston, organized the rally.
I think one of the big catalysts of this thing was watching Right to Work pass. I mean, that was the opening salvo, and everything else was going to domino after that. Women's rights were on the chopping block. You know, the discrimination bill was in high favor for a minute there. And the taxes that were being removed from coal and gas, the gun bills, everything was just sort of just came. It was just a domino of stuff that wasn't listening to the people. I mean, even if you disagree with some of the stuff, they're not people's votes. They're not people's bills.
Solomon said he expressed his concerns on Facebook, which quickly gained support from various groups. Speakers at the rally included members of the NAACP, Fairness West Virginia, and the Appalachian Workers Alliance, among others. The rally ended with members of the crowd pledging to register to vote, register their friends, and encourage others to get to the polls. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Rob Engel in Charleston.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with all of the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. And we're interested in your comments, so make sure you send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Chuck Anzalevich. And I'm John Cantese. Have a good morning.